It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President, Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, President Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support comes from United Electric Cooperative, Clarinda Regional Health Center, and Atchison Holt Electric. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest. It's a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. Listeners, you know that we highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region. And we all know there's so much to celebrate regarding Northwest Missouri, Southwest Iowa, Southeast Nebraska, and Northeast Kansas. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV, KRNW, trust you had a great June and, like you, are enjoying the midsummer months. I am pleased to welcome you to the July edition of our show. We'll provide two segments this month. In segment one, we will focus on Northwest Missouri State University's Energy Conservation and Alternative Fuels program. We'll do that by visiting with Dan Boyd. In segment two, we feature Jason Offit. He's an author and professor from Northwest Missouri State University's School of Communications and Mass Media. Jason has written several books and articles, and we'll visit about his writings, how he got started, and plans for his writing in the future. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin this month's program, I welcome Dan Boyd to All Things Northwest. Dan's tenure with Northwest Missouri State University's Facilities Services team began in October of 2012, and he presents a portfolio of energy efficiency projects over a 10-year period. He is a certified energy manager from the Association of Energy Engineers and received his bachelor's in mechanical engineering from the University of Arkansas. Dan's primary responsibility is to develop, implement, and maintain an energy efficiency program for Northwest Missouri State. His work is resulting in reduction of the university's energy costs, which also promotes sustainability with the reduction of the campus's carbon footprint. Although originally from Neosho, Missouri, he is now a resident of Maryville with his wife Crystal and children Tobin and Nora. Welcome, Dan, to All Things Northwest.
Hey, thanks so much for having me here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and you know, your transition to Northwest Missouri State has been, in my eyes, prolific because you brought a lot of expertise, but dare I say a lot of energy too. But as we talk at Northwest, a long history of use of alternative energy, being smart with what we do, how we do it, and also saving the taxpayers some money. So that's what we'll focus on today. First of all, as you think about the energy program and all that it encompasses at Northwest, can you kind of describe that?
Well, just like you mentioned there, it's all about taking a look at your resources and your expenses and trying to make some smart decisions with that. So here at Northwest, we spend about $10,000 daily on utilities. About $8,500 of that is energy. That's your natural gas, your wood fuel, pellets, and electricity, with electricity being the biggest part. So when you're spending that kind of money on utilities, it makes sense to obviously pay some attention to it. And energy is a really interesting place to pay attention to because there's a lot of opportunities there. And those opportunities don't only affect your total cost, but they can also have some big impacts, improvements on comfort and maintenance issues. So if we can replace a piece of equipment, get a good return on investment on it through the energy savings, have it pay for itself, and we're reducing maintenance issues and making a more comfortable environment, it's really a win for everyone.
And so when you're looking at energy kind of more broadly, Dan, you're looking at heating and cooling and lighting and hardware and software, everything that we do to kind of run the campus, so to speak, and hook into the city and county and so on. That's for what you're responsible. Is that accurate?
Exactly. Kind of break it down into multiple systems. So everything from the data analysis, you know, looking at our utility rate structures, how we produce energy at the plants. We have a chiller plant and a boiler plant that produce energy and send it out to campus. To the end use, you know, what are these devices consuming? Can they consume less? or be replaced with something that consumes less.
And I know throughout this segment, we'll talk about some of those metrics, the measures that you're talking about. But as you think back to your time here at Northwest, which has, you know, really only been about 2.5 years, close to 3 now, what kinds of changes have you put in place that you're proud of as you think back, you know, last couple of years?
Well, it's really not just me. There's a lot of people in facility services who've contributed a lot to the program. Can't say enough about the group I work with. And
we always talk about team here, no question about it.
It's definitely a team effort. So I kind of view myself as having the responsibility of going out and looking for these projects and figuring out how to get them implemented, because other people don't have the time, but it really is everybody coming together. So to get into the specifics on some of the projects we've done, kind of break it down into operational measures and projects. So when it comes to operational measures, that's things like scheduling. You know, we have a lot of downtime being university. We have extended breaks during winter, summer, spring break, Thanksgiving break. So we look at scheduling buildings during those periods and then off hours in buildings where we can do that. Sequences of operations. So there's a lot of behind the scenes things you can do with equipment to make it run more efficiently. Maybe a damper is hanging open in the middle of summer. If you can get control of that damper and recirculate more air in the building, you're cutting down on your energy use and nobody even notices the change. Seasonal equipment like fans and pumps, some of that equipment can be run in certain seasons and doesn't need to run in other seasons, so paying attention to that. When it comes to new construction, looking at the design reviews and how the new equipment is going to work, making sure we're getting a good value for our dollar in that equipment investment, that it's going to have a good long-term payback for us. And then fuel sources. So we have the wood chips that are a great fuel source for us. They're our lowest cost energy here on campus. When I started here, we were actually running an absorption chiller in the summer. And after some analysis, we found out that even though wood fuel is our cheapest fuel, that machine is so inefficient that we were better off switching to electricity. So analysis like that on the operational side.
And what about the lighting, too? You did a kind of a upgrade or retrofit as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that leads right into the projects portion.
Okay.
So those before were operational measures. Looking at projects, we've done, as you mentioned, lighting. T12 lighting systems that was used on campus was banned, actually, a few years ago. So we had supply issues getting those in, and really it was the right thing to do anyway, just from an energy standpoint.
Older lights that were inefficient, essentially, correct?
Older, less efficient lights.
Right,
correct.
Okay.
So we were able to go in and internally address that and get those upgraded and utilize a program from Kansas City Power and Light that paid for about half that project. So at the end of the day, we've got, you know, we have a project that paid for itself in 2 years. We've got brand new lighting that has warranties on it and is anticipated to last about 4 times longer than what was in there before. So really a win all the way around. As far as other measures go, when we did the remodel at the Union for the dining project, we got Energy Star equipment. We were able to get some incentives for that. We did some things with the ventilation in there to drive some energy savings and also get us a rebate. Variable frequency drives are another big one we've done. Variable frequency drives, or VFDs, are a device you can put on a motor to slow it down and adjust it. So, for example, on a fan that's a large fan on campus serving a big area of a building, you might need full airflow in the summer during cooling season, but you really don't need it in the winter and in the shoulder season. So if we can dial that back, we're saving energy without really impacting the environment.
And then you also implemented some measures as students were going away for winter break, for example. You put some things in place to save some dollars. Can I talk about that?
Sure. So during extended breaks, as you mentioned, we've got a lot of opportunity for energy savings. We take into account the building type, its usage patterns, what types of controls we have in that building. That all dictates what we can and can't do. When it comes to high rises in our dorms, we're able to do quite a bit because occupancy is essentially zero for those periods. So we're able to set back temperatures. We're able to shut off ventilation and exhaust, shut down hallway lighting, obviously, and some things like that. And those measures really add up when you're talking about several weeks in large buildings like that.
And let's talk about that. Do you have the cumulative dollars in terms of financial and even environmental impacts as you think through the measures and how much we've saved? As you mentioned, the lighting project paid for itself in 2 years. So not just the financials, but also the environmental impacts.
Yeah, well, starting with the environmental side, about 85% of the energy produced in Missouri or consumed in Missouri is produced by coal, which is traditionally one of the dirtier fuels out there. And utilities have done a great job reducing some of those environmental factors associated with coal, you know, scrubbers to knock down nitrous oxides and sulfur dioxide, mercury emissions, that sort of thing. Unit of energy consumed, that's environmental impact for us. So every time we conserve, we are saving on that. When it comes to carbon reduction, I know there's a lot of discussion about, you know, what is the magnitude or the impact of human emissions or fossil fuel emissions on that. But there's certain things that are pretty well established. CO2 absorbs infrared radiation. Our emissions are contributing to higher levels. And those two items alone put together say that, you know, this is going to increase the heat in the system. Independent of what the magnitude of that effect is, we've conserved about 5,000 tons of CO2 annually is how much less we're putting in the environment. Economists will put that value really all over the board, but kind of the typical range you'll see is between $20 and $40 a ton. So 5,000 tons, somewhere around $50,000 to $100,000 in externalities that we're avoiding by conserving this energy.
So huge savings all along, and also environmental impacts that we save. We've also garnered some awards, and can you talk about some of those?
Yeah, I guess the big award we could talk about is the Campus Conservation Nationals. That's a program we run every year for our residents on campus. We've installed submetering in all of our residence halls, and so we can see that on a daily basis, what that consumption is. And so we challenge our residents to conserve energy for a certain 3-week period, and whoever has the largest reduction wins an award. And we competed with, I believe it was 130 universities this last year, and we ranked in the top 5 for energy conservation.
And we've done that, I think, for the last couple of years, so we're very proud of that. And listeners, we're talking with Dan Boyd here on All Things Northwest. Dan is with Northwest Missouri State University, our facilities services team, focusing on energy, our alternative energy program, and certainly all that we do relative to energy reduction. And Dan, that award, we should remind our listeners, of those 130 institutions, those were Division I, Division II, all kinds of institutions, large, small, whatever. So being in the top 10 is very favorable. So those are some environmental impacts that are positive, obviously, Dan, but there's financial impacts that you and obviously the team have been able to put in play that really helped the university.
Yeah, that's right. The environmental stuff is great, but the financial part is what really pays the bills and what keeps the program viable. So when it comes to energy consumption, the first year of the program, we reduced energy consumption on campus 15% for about a 12% reduction in expense and savings of a little over $400,000. Second year of the program, energy savings were about 15% and about 18% on the financial side. And that's due to, you know, we didn't increase the savings much on the fuel side, but remember we had that really hard winter that contributed to some of that. Still, we shifted some of that energy use to lower cost heating fuels, so achieved that 18% for savings of about $670,000. And this year we're on track. We've got 10 months of data so far, and we're on track for probably somewhere around $750,000. So by the end of this year, we should be somewhere around $1.9 million in cumulative savings.
And those savings, is that cost avoidance? Is that
It's largely cost avoidance. Actually, right after the program started, late 2012, we were hit with about a 16% rate increase from our major utility, electric utility. So these are avoided costs.
Well, it's pretty obvious that as a team, as an organization, you know, which includes, by the way, our students as we're talking here with the residence halls program that we have in place, everyone comes together to look at how we approach energy, the use thereof, the savings thereof, and it has significant environmental positive impacts, but also financial impacts for the university. What trends are you seeing locally, regionally, nationally, Dan, in terms of energy?
Energy's all over the news, and it's really difficult to keep up with. I have a hard time keeping up with it anyway. When it comes to crude oil production, we've just done amazing things here in the last few years. Crude oil production domestically has declined since the early 1970s, and then in about 2008 that turned around, and now we're almost back up to our 1970s production levels. Gone from about 5 million barrels a day to 9 million barrels a day, 9 million barrels a day just in a matter of years. Natural gas, a lot of conversation about natural gas. A few years ago, fracking became more widespread, that really lowered the cost, and it made utilities shift to natural gas as a fuel. So demand has increased, production has increased, prices have dropped, but now we've got concerns over, you know, fracking and what is that doing potentially seismically and to water quality. So if some legislation comes up, there's, you know, at the state level or national level, there's some real risk of price increases there with natural gas. When it comes to electricity, probably the main one that we'd be talking about here, you know, in the last 5 years, the state has seen about a 30% rate increase compared to about flatline for the rest of the country. And a lot of that's due to our heavy reliance on coal and some of the additional environmental measures that have to be taken now. In 2009, the legislature passed what's called the Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Act. That allowed, that and some other rulemaking from the Public Service Commission, have allowed utilities to really offer some great incentives for energy conservation. So where it's heading, I can't really say, but the incentive programs are out there to really make some good decisions on the conservation side.
And we should also mention to our listeners that Northwest Missouri State University was honored to host one of the statewide energy tours. The state is putting together an energy plan, and so we were honored to host one of the meetings, statewide meetings, and they kind of referenced a lot of what you just kind of talked about, kind of the analysis worldwide, nationwide, what its impact is here in Missouri and where we should head as a state. It's very clear to me, Dan, that with your leadership, with our team in place, with our students that have the knowledge of what to do and what not to do in many cases, we're certainly taking care of what we need to take care of on a daily basis, though there's always room for improvement. So talk to our listeners. What can a community member, a student, a faculty staff member, someone living, you know, locally, regionally, listening to the program, what can we all do to help the cause?
You know, there's a lot of just common sense items people can do, specifically for residents here at Northwest, to help contribute to the efforts. If residents can make sure windows are closed when it's really hot or really cold outside, that makes a huge difference on the load on the air conditioning and heating systems. Shut off lights when you're not in a room. If you're leaving for a weekend or an extended period, turn up or turn down your thermostat as appropriate to get some of that energy savings. Most of our systems on campus recover pretty quickly, so it's not a big source of discomfort to come back to a room that's a little bit hot or a little bit cool. A lot of people focus on plug loads, you know, just things that you plug in. Most newer electronics are really efficient in their low power state. Most Energy Star appliances are just very low consumption when they're not in use. But still, there's TVs and things like that that could be unplugged for additional savings. When it comes to other campus users, some of the same things apply. You know, windows, try to keep those closed during extreme temperatures. And lights, you know, last one out, shut off the lights. That's a pretty easy one. A lot of the office equipment has power saver modes. Maybe you have little fans that you run. There's copiers, printers, things like that that could be shut off when you're gone for weekends or especially over long breaks. All those items really add up.
No question. All common sense solutions that many of us know about. Sometimes we do them, sometimes we're busy, but they all make a difference, not just on campus, but listeners, wherever you're at, it can help you in your own home or in your own businesses. Dan, in terms of Northwest Missouri State University, next steps on energy and alternative fuels, what do you see in our short-term horizon?
We've done a lot, and there's still a lot left to go. We have buildings from all different construction eras here on campus and from all different time periods of renovations. We have pneumatic controls still in some buildings that need to be updated, still have some lighting systems that need to be looked at, building envelope issues that we can address for further savings. It's kind of a matter of getting that low-hanging fruit first to generate the savings to fund some of those other projects, and that's kind of the phase we're in right now, but there's ample opportunity here to continue driving savings.
Well, we sure do appreciate your team, your work, and all that we're doing, all that we've done, but all that we're doing here today and into the future. Dan, also, we had a pretty exciting announcement here in the last couple of months. We have some charging stations on campus. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, that's right. Kansas City Power and Light contacted us late last year and offered us the opportunity to participate in their Clean Charge Network, which we'd be a host site. Basically, Kansas City Power and Light is providing the electric vehicle charging stations, and Northwest is covering the cost of the electricity for those stations for the first 2 years. So it's free. It's free energy for people. The electric cars are out there. There's a lot of models, and anyone in the community or on campus has the opportunity to come to Northwest and charge for free. So this could be a huge benefit for students, faculty, and staff who live a few miles away and could use free fuel.
And I've noticed there's a couple of stations on campus. You have prime parking, too.
That's right. Two locations, two charging stations between Notebook Services and the stadium, and then one on the east side of Volk.
You bet. So we invite listeners, whether or not you're on campus daily or if you just come in occasionally and you have a car you can plug in. That's great. That's Dan Boyd. Thank you, Dan, for joining All Things Northwest.
Thank you, John.
When we return to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Jason Offutt. We'll discuss his writings, how he got started, and his plans for the future in terms of books and so much more. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCB Maryville, KRNW, Chillicothe.
Support for All Things Northwest on KXCV KRNW comes from Atchison Holt Electric Cooperative and United Electric Cooperative, providing power to rural customers in Northwest Missouri and Southwest Iowa. Both companies would like to remind you that pad mounted transformers or electrical substations carry high voltage and to teach children not to play around them. More information at ahec.coop or ueci.coop. Support for All Things Northwest on KXCV KRNW comes from Clarinda Regional Health Center. For more than 75 years, Clarinda Regional has been providing health care to patients in Southwest Iowa and Northwest Missouri. More information is at clarindahealth.com.
Welcome back to the July edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Jasinski. We're now going to visit with Jason Offutt. Jason has taught journalism at Northwest Missouri State University since 2005. He's the author of 8 books, the humor novel, A Funeral Story, the parody survival guide, How to Kill Monsters Using Common Household Items, and 6 nonfiction titles, including the collection of humor essays On Being Dad, A Humorous Travelogue Across a Corn-Swept Land, An Epic Beer Run Through the Upper Northwest, and the paranormal work Haunted Missouri. He writes the award-winning syndicated humor column As I Was Saying, which appears in the Maryville Daily Forum. And in his career, Jason has been a newspaper editor, columnist, photographer, farmhand, bartender, and the mayor of a small Missouri town. He lives in Maryville with his wife and 3 children. Welcome, Jason, to All Things Northwest.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
What a great background. Now, you and I know each other, obviously, and you've had a great teaching career here at Northwest. But let's first talk about writing. When was it, you know, early on in life that you came to the conclusion, I like writing and I want to be a writer?
Well, I remember specifically I was 10 years old. I'd always enjoyed reading, and I always enjoyed telling stories. And I told my parents, I said, you know, I want to be a writer when I grow up. And they, you know, my dad rubbed me on top of the head and said, that's really cute, now go play. But I've always had that desire since then, and you know, I feel good that I've actually accomplished it.
Does writing run in your family then, or is that something you kind of picked up on your own?
No, it's just something I picked up. I'm sort of an aberration in the family.
Okay. And, you know, your works are eclectic. You know, you're talking about the paranormal, humorous essays, and really talking about, you know, a collection of essays across a variety of topics. As you think about your topics, and obviously you go back kind of a lifelong love for this, but how have you collected those thoughts about what you'd like to write about?
Well, generally, it's whatever interests me at the time. With the with humor, I've always been interested in humor. As a child, I wanted to be the best humorist in my state, and you know that darn Mark Twain beat me to it, and so I can't be that, but.
Lofty goals, though. That's great.
Yeah. I don't know. I just with the paranormal topics. I worked in the newspaper industry for 17 years, and you don't write about that. And I've always been interested. So when I started teaching, I had time. Didn't have an editor saying, you know, you can't write about that. So I tackled that one.
And so talk a little bit about that paranormal. I mean, it's been, you know, a big topic of yours in your writing. How did you come to that topic, and how do you approach it?
Well, I approach it in the way I taught a class here. About in 2009, I proposed a class called Paranormal Journalism, and it was approved, and I was really happy with that, and it was really popular. I still have students today asking, "Hey, I heard you had that paranormal class. Are you going to offer it again?" What I taught the students is to approach topics as seriously as the next. If somebody claims that they've seen something they can't explain, you know, they probably did see something. What it is up for debate, but they're certain that they saw something, so treat them with a little bit of respect. And that's how I go into it, is I'm a storyteller, so I tell people's stories, and sometimes people's stories are, you know, seeing grandma in the house, and grandma died 20 years ago.
And so let's talk about some of those stories that come to mind for our listeners of All Things Northwest. Maybe they have not had a chance to read some of your writings about the paranormal. What are a couple of your favorite stories regarding paranormal?
My favorite one is from Stanberry, Missouri. There was a guy actually from Cincinnati who moved to Stanberry. He followed a girl who dumped him when he moved here, but that's not part of the story. He thought he'd built a time machine on his kitchen table. And he wanted to build a bigger one, and he knew that the power of his house wouldn't work. It wouldn't be enough. So he and a few guys went out and stole 6 power line transformers from St. Joe Power and Light, and he built this man-sized time machine, and he was going to jump through it, and not to, you know, increase the body of knowledge or help fellow man. He wanted to, you know, to go 3 days in the future and get the lottery numbers. And when he flipped the machine on, all the power in town went off. And that's how he got arrested. But he was featured on Coast to Coast AM, which is a syndicated radio program that reaches over 500 stations. And his legend kind of got a life of its own. And I just thought it was interesting. It happened 27 miles away from here.
You can't make that story up, I don't think. Yeah. So true and arrested and all that.
True, right. And I actually was able to find him. I talked to the sheriff who arrested him and the city manager of Stanberry who walked into the house that night with the police to arrest him. And, you know, it was fun.
Now, I have to ask, have you since then decided to kind of build your own time machine just to see if that works or not?
No, I don't play the lottery.
Okay, yeah. Okay, got it. Okay, so that's the paranormal. That's one example of a story that you write about with regard to the paranormal. But, you know, humor has been certainly a big topic of yours. Talk about some of the humorous stories that you've covered over time.
Well, a lot of them in recent years have been about my kids, because children are certifiably insane. They don't behave normally at all. And my wife and I have 3 children that all act differently.
Now, they might be listening to this program. That's okay.
Oh, I tell them that at home.
Okay. All right.
That's just fine. That's fine. But, I mean, there's one of the basis of my humor is making things relatable. If somebody can understand what I'm talking about and you know, find humor in it, I've done my job as a humorist.
So, Jason, you talk about kids and raising kids. I know that you have the 3 children, but as you think about being a father, being a parent, and raising children, what are maybe a story or two that you can share about raising kids that you've written about?
Well, we have, my wife and I's oldest is 10, and when we were going to have our next child, it was 2 years later, and we were thinking, yeah, this is great. We're going to have 2 kids. When they get a little bit older, they'll play together. We can, you know, sit back and you know, hide and eat cookies, and they won't even notice us because they're playing. And so we've got a boy, and then we've got an 8-year-old girl. And as soon as the 8-year-old girl began to crawl, they fought. And they've fought ever since. They argue about everything. And remembering my childhood with my older sisters, that's fairly normal, I guess, except for, my gosh, our house is loud. It's so loud.
And as parents, obviously, we're not thinking about that early on, but then when you live it, you say, I kind of grew up in that manner, too.
Right. Well, and the funny thing about the kids, I mean, 8 and 10, they can get up and pour their own bowl of cereal and, you know, get dressed and do all this, brush their teeth. We don't have to tell them anymore. And my wife and I were like, this is great. We can sleep in on the weekends. And we have an 8-month-old now. We can never sleep in.
And things change.
Things change a lot.
So the process of writing, do you sit down, kind of, you know, put outlines together? What's your process of putting the ideas together?
There are a lot of authors who do use outlines. I don't, because I think it's fairly limiting. My basic process of writing is, you know, whenever I have an idea for a story, and that's one of the things that makes me absolutely crazy when people ask me where I get my ideas, because I have no idea. And ask any author, and they have no idea where they come from. But I get an idea, and folks, anybody wanting to be a writer out there, and you suffer from writer's block, here's what you do. Sit down every single day at the same time, at the same place, with the same cup of coffee or tea or soda or whatever you drink in front of you, same lighting conditions, same computer, make sure your situation's exactly the same as it was the day before. Within a couple of weeks, you'll have yourself trained that at that point you start writing. So I've done that. I've trained myself to where I sit down, I can write for 2 hours a day, and I never have writer's block.
Okay. And so are you working on a book right now, Jason?
Yes. I'm actually working on two, because I had two ideas, and I keep going back and forth. I've always liked horror. I grew up watching horror movies, and generally my books are funny, and I don't want to write a funny one. I want to write one that'll scare the pants off people. So I'm working on that, and at the same time, I'm writing a book about our latest child, who's 8 months old, and this is the pregnancy that I'm writing about.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to those books. How have your books, how has your writing influenced your teaching?
It's because I teach a lot of writing classes, and most of my books have been nonfiction, so it's kept me fresh. I do what I teach by going out and interviewing people, you know, prepping for the interview, interviewing techniques, how to take notes, and then putting the story together after that. So, I mean, keeping myself on top of what I'm teaching my students is really, really important. With the fiction, it's just, again, good writing is good writing. It's just, it's practice. And with my column that I've written every single week since 1992, I teach opinion writing, so I do what I teach.
And why teaching?
It was something that was always in the back of my head. I had initially wanted to teach English when I was in high school, and my high school English teacher, who didn't like me a bit, talked me out of it. And I'm glad she did. Journalism, because I wasn't going to go into that, and I eventually did, and that helped my writing more than anything. Being on deadline, having to have all my, you know, all my grammar, all story structure, everything by a certain time really, really helped me out.
Being a small town mayor, did that help you out?
Well, to some extent, I was able to secure $750,000 in grants for infrastructure, and I didn't embezzle it. So that either proves that I'm not that smart or I'm honest. I'm going to go with honest.
Okay, yeah. But that grant wasn't for, you know, any paranormal activities or anything like that?
No, it was for clean water.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Got it. So some of the books that you've talked about, you know, an epic beer run through the upper Midwest. Talk about that.
Well, I've always liked travel books. I like to go places. Actually, I taught a class in London a couple of years ago, which was a lot of fun, but I like car trips because I like to see everything. And you know, US 71 goes from the Gulf to Canada, and you know, I started looking just one day at a map and saw all these places between here and Canada, and I started doing some research, and there a lot of interesting people have been born between here and Canada. There's been a lot of, you know, it's a historical, battles that have happened. There's a lot of interesting places. There's a Cabbage Patch Museum, you know, all sorts of weird things. And I thought it would be a good book just to take a trip, drive to Canada to buy beer and then come home. And it's an 11-hour drive, but it took me 4 days because, you know, all the stopping and all the interviews and all the pictures and everything. And It's humorous because a lot of funny things happened, and I interviewed the captain of the it was a 2004 or 2006 Olympic curling team who owns a restaurant in Bemidji, Minnesota. So I mean, I was just a journalist for 4 days, four hard days, and I bought beer and brought it home.
Great road trip. Beer in Canada, Cabbage Patch dolls, and curling.
Mm-hmm.
Combine all those things together. What about the book, How to Kill Monsters Using Common Household Items? Talk about that.
It's a humorous parody book.
What's your favorite household item to kill a monster with?
You really can't beat a hammer. Frozen turkey's pretty good, depending on the monster. Yeah. Lawnmowers are nice. You kind of have to take the evil garden gnome and stake them to the ground, but they're fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm never going to look at a frozen turkey again in the same way, probably. Let's kind of move on from there. You wrote Haunted Missouri. Is Missouri haunted?
Well, I'm not going to say yes or no because, a lot of people don't believe that ghosts exist. Some people do. All the people I interviewed are convinced that what they saw in these places were legitimate ghosts. And, who am I not to believe them? All the places that I went to... The book... There are a lot of books like this out there. And I've read a number of them. And they all mostly deal with private residences. And that bothered me because, reading one of these books, I'd like to go there. I'd like to see this. I don't want to stare at somebody's, living room window at 2 o'clock in the morning. That could get me arrested. So I looked at all the places in Missouri that are purportedly haunted that are open to the public. So I wrote this as basically a haunted tour guide of the state.
By the way, you're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe. And we're talking with Jason Offutt. He's a professor here at Northwest Missouri State University and an author. But Jason, as you're talking about your various backgrounds, your various topics, you've been a farmhand, you've been a bartender, you've been that mayor of a small city town. It strikes me that you're an observer. I mean, you're an author, you're a journalist, you're a professor, but you're really an observer of the human psyche and how people feel, and you don't make judgments one way or the other. You're saying, hey, it could be haunted or it might not be, but you're an observer. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely accurate, and that's one of the first things in my reporting class that I try and hammer into the students, that in order to be a good storyteller, in order to be a good reporter, you have to be observant. You have to see and smell, hear everything around you. So, yes, I pay a lot of attention.
And I need to kind of expand on that because, as you say, you're teaching kind of, in the first part of your class, how to be a good observer. It strikes me that in our society today, listeners, I think we can all appreciate this, it's a fast-paced society. We have a hard time even sitting down and listening to all the great programming on public radio, for example, with phones and looking at the latest social media, et cetera, sometimes we're blocked away from being the observer out there. So how do you get across to your students that sometimes you have to put your phone away and really look around?
Whenever they're on the job, I don't think that's a problem. If they're out interviewing somebody, I sure hope their phone's in their pocket.
Right.
I don't know how well this bleeds into everyday life. Hopefully it does to some extent. It's really annoying going to a concert or some public event, and half the audience is holding their phones up recording, and it's like, no, experience it. Don't record it. You're not going to watch it later. Just live the moment and experience this. And that has become a real issue with today's society.
You and I come across a lot of people who have a lot to say. They might be want to be opinion column writers. They might be individuals that have ideas for books or pamphlets or guides or whatever. What's some advice you can provide to the aspiring writer of any type?
The first thing is don't be afraid, because people want to write a lot of times, but they don't want people to read it because they're afraid of being judged. Writers and all artistic types have to have a very thick skin ahead of time. Or I mean, that's before they even put pen to paper. They have to have a thick skin because not everybody's going to like what you write. Does that mean it's bad? No, it doesn't. Two is learn the language as best you possibly can. Spelling, grammar. I mean, people are terrified of grammar because they had to, you know, diagram sentences when they were in, you know, seventh grade. But learning how to put sentences together is vitally important. One of the other things I stress to my students is if you use bad grammar, bad spelling, bad punctuation, the reader's going to think you're dumb and they're not going to take you seriously. So learn the basics first before you start telling stories.
Just beautiful advice there. And really, the bottom line is don't be afraid and get started. And obviously, you have a unique perspective, Jason, of being able to observe, but to be able to not take things too seriously, correct?
Correct.
And how have you done that? Because, boy, there's going to be a lot of serious topics out there across our society, but you've been able to kind of take a step back a little bit.
Right. Well, I've always used humor, whether it's in teaching, which it seems to relax students a lot. It makes me feel better. it's no fun to spend your life being too serious about things. I tend to find humor about every situation.
Well, Jason Offutt, we really appreciate your ability to take a step back to look at things from a humorous point of view. And really take a slice of life and say, let's enjoy life a little bit and think about topics such as paranormal activity, raising children, taking road trips, whatever it might be. And certainly good luck in your future writings. Jason Offutt, thanks for joining All Things Northwest.
John, thank you very much for having me.
Listeners, that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, Dan Boyd from Northwest Missouri State University's Facility Services Team, and Jason Offutt, author and professor of journalism here at Northwest. Thanks, too, to our producer, Brandon Travis. He's a student here at Northwest Missouri State University, along with KXCV General Manager Rodney Harris. Friends, take good care, treat each other well, provide good works for others, and keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm John Jasinski. And thanks for your support of All Things Northwest, Northwest Missouri State University, KXCV-KRNW, and Public Radio.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development and Northwest Missouri Regional Council of Governments. More on Facebook at facebook.com/NWMORCOG. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is written and produced by multimedia journalism major Ben Noley. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.